Welcome into the NHL at the Rink podcast. As always, Dan Rosen here and Sean Rourke out there. And Sean, I mean, free agency feels like it's come and gone at this point. We've got all the big names. Well, most of the big names are signed, but Alex Pietrangelo to Vegas. Let's just start right there. We'll welcome you in. How you doing? Alex Pietrangelo to Vegas. What are your thoughts?
I'm doing great, Dan. Thanks for asking. And my thoughts are, you know, free agency started and it was very different. There was no courting period. Came 2 days after the draft and it got off to a slow start. There's no denying it. And everybody's like, oh, where's the free agent frenzy? When's it going to happen? Well, it happened, right? I mean, within a 48-hour period, everybody went off the board and it was crazy in its own way just because it wasn't what we were used to. You know, other than the Pietrangelo contract, maybe Krug a little bit, there weren't those huge contracts. Some teams got some steals. Some players got some very good deals for them. To me, it was one of the most intriguing free agent periods I've ever seen. And the most intriguing part, and we're going to talk a lot about this on the podcast, was Taylor Hall signing for 1 year at $8 million. And we're going to have Taylor on, and he can talk a little bit about why he signed that deal. And it was the most unusual deal of the whole free agent frenzy, and I'm completely intrigued by it on so many levels.
Yeah, no, Taylor Hall should be joining us shortly. We're lucky to have him. Signed a one-year, $8 million contract with the Buffalo Sabres. That was the one, Sean, that I literally fell off my chair when I saw it because I did not see that coming. No clue that would be a one-year deal. No clue that it would be Buffalo. So we'll get to that. But let's Alex Pietrangelo, right? I mean, Kelly McCrimmon has a call with the media last night. We are recording this Tuesday afternoon. So the call was the media on Monday. And I mean, what an informational call it was. You got Alex Pietrangelo's contract, 7 years, $61.6 million with Vegas. That's an $8.8 million salary cap hit. Then he delivers the news on Robin Lehner needing surgery, and it's a cleanup surgery, and he should be okay. Then he delivers the news that Marc-Andre Fleury is going to probably be staying with the Vegas Golden Knights, at least for the start of the season. That's a lot of information to take in at one point. We can break it all down, but overall, I mean, this Vegas team with Pietrangelo not having Paul Stastny, do you think they're that much better? With Lehner and Fleury, we know they'll be there. They traded Paul Stastny. They signed Pietrangelo. They traded Nate Schmidt. Are they that much better than they were coming out of the bubble?
No. And that's the problem I'm having with this whole thing. Look, I had nothing against, you know, Pietrangelo. I think he's a great player. He's a little old to be getting that kind of deal. I think he's what, 30 years old? So that takes him to 37.
It's going to be 31 in January, I think.
Yeah. So, you know, and look, I don't know that defense was their problem. Right. The reason that they didn't play in the Stanley Cup final is because they couldn't score against Anton Khudobin, who had a great run, but he's a backup. Right. They couldn't score against them. You look at their D before they traded Nate Schmidt, and, you know, they had Theodor. He's going to be in the Norris Trophy conversation. You have Alec Martinez. You have Nate Schmidt. You know, I like Nick Holden. So you had some pieces back there. Like, if I'm looking at that team from the outside, I'm not saying, you know, what I need is I need the best defenseman on the market. You know, but this has been Vegas's DNA, right? Since they came into the league, everybody expected them to sit back and take a few years to get to where they're going. And then they blew up that blueprint and they said, you know, we're going to the Stanley Cup final in our first year. And then, you know, you're like, oh, well, what an interesting story that was. They're so far ahead of where they should be. Now they can sit back and kind of let it build organically. And then boom, they go out and they make a trade. They go out and they make another trade. They get Stone, they get Pacioretty. You know, whoever the manager's been there has not been shy about making changes. They fired their coach who won coach of the year. Like there's no complacency in that organization. So maybe they know better than I know, but when I look at that team, a number one defenseman was not the issue for me, especially with Shea Theodore in the fold.
You know what? And I 100% agree with you. Sometimes I don't. Sometimes we do like to disagree, but I 100% agree with you on this one, because in clearing the cap space to be able to go sign an Alex Pietrangelo, A, they traded a good defenseman in Nate Schmidt, a guy who can bring a good shot. He's a good player. He makes less than Pietrangelo. He's not as good as Pietrangelo. Pietrangelo is an upgrade from Nate Schmidt. There's no question about it. Okay, so they're better there. But to do so also, they traded Paul Stastny. And now they have a hole down the middle at their second line center or their first line center, depending on how you viewed him. So now that hole's got to get filled internally, most likely. It could be Chandler Stephenson. It could be Cody Glass. But there's a hole there that they created offensively to help an area that I didn't, like you said, that I didn't think was a weakness for them. Their problem was they couldn't score. Now they need to find guys who can score. Pietrangelo is going to help them from the back end, but I didn't think it was that big of a need, like you said. But that being said, let's look at it from the other perspective, from where Pietrangelo came from. They signed Torrey Krug to, what did Krug get? 7 years, $45.5 million. So Pietrangelo gets about $16 million more than Torrey Krug got from the Blues. But in a way, I'll look at it and I'll say, Torrey Krug is not that much of a downgrade from Alex Pietrangelo. I'm not so bad. I think the Blues are okay here. I actually think Pietrangelo, he got his deal and whatnot. So, but if he wanted to go back to St. Louis, he overplayed his hand. They went out and signed Torrey Krug. I think they're okay too. There's a domino effect to all of this here, but I think the Blues are fine with Krug. I like Pietrangelo in Vegas. I just don't think it was a huge need.
Yeah, no, look, I look at the Blues and the one thing that concerns me is they're not as big, right? I mean, Torrey Krug plays bigger than he is, but the Blues are a big physical team. That's how they won the Stanley Cup. They intimidated a big physical team in the Boston Bruins. They intimidated Torrey Krug, right? That's what they did. They went out and they ran the Bruins around the building for six games. And then in game seven, they said, it's ours. And that's how they played the whole playoffs. And, you know, I don't know that Torrey Krug is that guy. And I like Torrey Krug a lot. I think he's going to help them. I just, when they get into those Western wars that you're going to see in the playoffs, you know, that's where my concern would be. But and just to circle back to Vegas for a minute, you know, you can look at the on-ice product all you want and you could say they're a better team right now. They've lost some key pieces to their identity in the last couple of years, right? And I look at that team, and I remember you covered them for a while, and I covered them. You know, the beauty of the Vegas team was that core and how tight that core was and how much they bought into the mission statement. And the people that were the biggest parts of that were Derek Englin, who's probably not coming back. Nate Schmidt, who kept that room in stitches. Marc-Andre Fleury, every player in that room loves him, right? And now you're sitting there as one of those core guys that's built this thing over, you know, 3.5 years, and you're looking around and you're seeing that the business doesn't escape even an expansion team, right? Like that misfit core isn't there anymore. And that's not their identity anymore. We talked about this, I think, on the podcast last week, that they've almost become in 3.5 years like a Toronto. Like if there's a big game out there, Vegas has got their rifle and they're going into the bush and they're going to come out with the trophy. And that's not the underdog that Vegas came off as 3.5 years ago. It might be the quickest transition in the history of all sports. And I'm curious if there's a rebound effect in a couple of years or if this is the new reality for them.
Well, I think you bring up a good point about Nate Schmidt because he was the glue of that locker room. And I do wonder now, Alex Pietrangelo is not a guy who's going to come in and rock the boat. That's not his style, right? I mean, he's not that type of personality. He's not that type of player, but there is going to be a little bit of an effect here when you lose a Nate Schmidt. And I think I can't blame Vegas for going big game hunting, Sean. I mean, this is what their owner wants them to do. This is what they do. I get it. But I think you have to be a little concerned or at how this is viewed, you know, within the rest of the league, where you sign a big contract with Vegas, Stastny, Schmidt, and the loyalty is not there. You'll get moved if they find somebody that they believe is better. Not that that's business. That's okay. But I just think that there is something to be said for that and just something to be on the lookout for. Do you agree at all with that?
I do to a degree, but I also think there's no complacency in that room.
No.
There can't be. You know, you look around the league and there's some teams that have had some success and are pretty complacent. You know, hey, we made it to the Western Conference Final. We made it to the Eastern Conference Final. We've been in the playoffs 6 or 7 years, whatever those benchmarks are. I mean, this is a team that's exceeded all expectations and they've torn it up every year. Like, if you didn't know when Gerard Gallant got fired, that there is no status quo with the Vegas Golden Knights, you know it now. I mean, the face of the franchise was almost moved. He's staying now. Partially, look, Brad McCrimmon can put whatever
Kelly
he wants on it. I'm sorry, Kelly. But he can't deny that if he could have moved.
Oh, 100%.
He would have. Yeah, if there 100%. Was a place for Fleury when the goalie musical chairs stopped, when the song was over and Marc-Andre Fleury and a couple other goalies were looking around and saying, where do I sit down? And realized that there were no seats. That's when, oh, you know what? We love our goalie tandem. We love that we're spending $12 million a year on our goalies, just like the Montreal Canadiens are. We're completely happy with this. It's going to be a condensed schedule. You need two goalies, you know, whatever you want to say. There's nobody else that has that much of a flat cap tied up in one position. So, you know, and I wonder how deep those scars go. I mean, Marc-Andre's he's a proud guy. And he feels like he's been cast aside to a degree.
Yeah, no, and it's a great point. They would have traded him had they could have traded him. But Kelly McCrimmon sort of indicated that, sort of hinted at that. So the trade market's kind of frozen up, you know, in that sense, in terms of the need at that position, especially after the dominoes fell. And that's a good segue. And by the way, just to, you know, put it back out there, we will have Taylor Hall on shortly. He will be our guest today. Signed a 1-year, $8 million contract with the Buffalo Sabres on Sunday. But your segue to the goalie market, Sean, I mean, it was perfect, right? So
I'm a segue machine.
You are a segue machine. Every time a goalie signed with a new team, the first thing I said was, well, there's another team that's not going to go out and get Marc-Andre Fleury, right? So Braden Holtby signs with Vancouver. Jacob Markstrom signs with Calgary. Henrik Lundqvist signs with Washington. Thomas Greiss signs with Detroit. Cam Talbot signs with Minnesota. Hudobin re-signs with Dallas. Each time that happened, I'm like, there's another team that's not getting Fleury. Mike Smith re-signing with Edmonton was the one that surprised me the most. I thought they might be going out in the market to try to get Fleury because we know the need that they have in goal there. And then it just, you know, I mean, maybe all along Vegas was like, well, we know Robin Lehner's going to have surgery, so we don't want to move him, or they weren't getting what they were getting. I think they would have traded him if they could have gotten what they had gotten. But that goalie market was as fluid as we thought it would be, and then there was no seats left for Marc-Andre Fleury.
That's the move that surprised you the most?
No. In terms of the goalie market.
In the goalie market, it's not Corey Crawford in New Jersey. A team that their own GM admits isn't close to contending, that's waiting for its two young players in Jack Hughes and Nico Hischier to take off, in his own words. They go out and they get a three-time Stanley Cup winning goalie with injury concerns and walk away from another goalie with injury concerns in Corey Schneider. That move blew me away just because I don't know what it means, right? Well, I mean, you know, Tom Fitzgerald talked about the fact that he's going to help with the culture and, you know, maybe buy them a couple of wins that they don't have or that they wouldn't have, and gives them a little bit more stability. And look, Corey Crawford was great in the playoffs. If that's the Corey Crawford you're getting, you've just accelerated your process a little bit. When that one came across, I did not fall off my seat like you, but I was shocked.
Let's get to that one a little bit down the road here, because he's connecting to audio right now. Our guest, this is our first time we're going live straight to a guest, Sean. We got Taylor Hall on the line right now. Signed a 1-year, $8 million contract with the Buffalo Sabres on Sunday. Taylor, welcome to the show. How you doing, man?
Good, thanks. How are you guys?
We are good. So let's break it down. I was on your Zoom yesterday that the Sabres did, and you're all in on Buffalo. Just break it down for us. Why 1 year? Why Buffalo?
Yeah, just going through the free agency process, you know, knowing what options I had and you know, the outlook going forward, it just seemed like the best thing for me in the short and the long term. And a team like Buffalo, I think they have some elite pieces and a coach that I really trust. And it just seemed to make sense. I know people are, you know, asking me why I did it and stuff, but I think when you really break it down for me, it makes sense. And I'm really happy about it.
I wanted to talk to you a little bit about Ralph Kruger, the coach in Buffalo. You know, everybody that's been around him for a long period of time just raves about him. And, you know, I know that you've had him. I spent a lot of time around him at the World Cup of Hockey. And then last year when Buffalo went to Sweden and spent about a week around him, I actually saw him give a couple of coaching clinics, which were just unbelievable. But I'm curious, as a player and as an elite player, when you deal with Ralph, what is it that makes his approach so appealing?
Well, there's a lot of trust. And I think when you have trust, you know, you really believe in what they're doing and what they're saying. And as a player, you know, having that communication and that, that give and take is huge. As an offensive guy, it's nothing better than knowing, you know, if you do make a mistake or turn a puck over or something like that, like that stuff's going to happen, and know that Ralph's going to be on your side and teach you and correct you in the right way. It was a lot of fun when he coached me. It was a long time ago, I know, but I still have really good memories of how he coached and how we got the most out of guys on our team. And I feel he can still do the same with the guys in Buffalo.
And you said something on your call with the Buffalo media, Taylor, that intrigued me too. You said, you know, Ralph is a guy, is a coach who in 2020 really makes sense for a lot of players. I wonder if you could break that down, like just in this era of players, why is, you know, what is it about Ralph that works?
Yeah, I just, you know, not to say that today's athletes are softer than before, but I do think that, you know, today's athlete needs communication. He needs to know why he's doing something. He just can't be told, you know, this is what you have to do. And I think that Ralph is perfect for the NHL right now and going forward, with the amount of young players that they have on that team, I feel that he can get a lot out of them and really help their development, whether they're, you know, 30 years old or 20 years old. I think he can help guys.
You've seen a lot of Buffalo in the last few years when you were in New Jersey, and you look around the league when you're playing different teams and, you know, you're doing your film work or you take the roster sheet and you look at it. When you look at this Buffalo team, obviously the biggest calling card is the opportunity, I would assume, to play with Jack Eichel. Nothing against anybody you've played with, but he's an elite center that can certainly help your game. But there's some other good young pieces to that core. When you were kind of comparing teams and you saw what Buffalo had to offer, what did that core say to you?
Yeah, just, you know, I think I said it on the call yesterday. When you look past, you know, some of the, you know, the firings that have happened lately, there's some good pieces there. There's elite pieces there. And that's what you really need to build a contender, is you need to have elite players surrounded by really good players. And I think that's, you know, that's starting to really come there in Buffalo. And I believe that I said to my agent before the free agency even started, we were going through all 31 teams, and you know, Buffalo came along, and I said, you know, I'd like that to be something that I'd think about. And then sure enough, you know, I get on the call with Ralph and everything kind of happens and it works out. So I'm happy. Like I said, it's the best thing for me in the short and the long term. And hopefully we can make this work into something long term.
Yeah, we'll get to that too. But I wanted to ask you what you know, Taylor, about Jack's game that you think will mesh well with your game.
Well, he's a right-handed player. I'm left. He can fly. He can score. He can make plays. I think he can do it all. And obviously he's a big guy too. He's not going to be pushed around. He's not going to be taken over in the face-off circle. And you know, like you said, I, you know, no offense to anyone that I played with before, but you know, realistically, this is probably, you know, other than maybe Connor in his first year, this is the best player that I'll have played with. And I think a guy that can only get better and probably only increase his exposure if he plays in the playoffs and plays in situations like that. So hopefully we can get him there.
Do you guys have any kind of a pre-existing relationship, and have you talked much to him since you signed?
Yeah, no, honestly, I've met him a couple times before this, but not really anything extensive. And the night that it happened, we talked a bit, and I know he was excited that I was going to come and talk to a few other guys. I know that they have a good group there and guys get along well. And I'm excited to meet everyone. You know, talking about Jack a lot, but there's a lot of other good pieces there and guys that I know are good hockey players and good people. So I'm excited for that.
And you mentioned it, Taylor, the opportunity possibly to make this a longer term relationship. Ralph Krueger mentioned that. Kevin Adams mentioned that. In a way, you're betting on yourself, but you said it yesterday, you're also betting on the Sabres. So tell me a little bit about what your mindset is as you go into this now, just 1 year, but thinking maybe long term.
Yeah, I mean, in a perfect world, you know, we have a good year next year. We make the playoffs and really see some improvements. And then, you know, that's something where, you know, my agent and I, we'd have to have that conversation with them to see if something could work out long term. But like I said, I think in the short and the long term, this is the best thing for me. The marketplace, it was different than it had been in years past. And with COVID and everything, with the amount of games that we might not be playing next year, I think this was a good call for me. And I'm joining a team that I think, like I said, can really hopefully can really turn some heads and have a lot of improvement.
The other thing that I wanted to ask you was about the economic realities of this marketplace. So you envision yourself going into free agency, I'm sure like everybody else in any other year, you know, maybe you'll have the interview period and you'll get a multi-year deal, whatever it may be. And that just wasn't the reality for you right now. So describe the market. What was this like for you as you thought about free agency and then the day finally came and you go through the weekend? Just kind of what was this like for you?
Yeah, it was kind of a wild ride. I mean, to say it was unique and different from years past, I think is an understatement. Unless you were, you know, Petrangelo, you were coming into it after the first couple of days. It probably wasn't what you had expected, but that's fine. That's the way it is. That's the reality of the way the world that we're living in right now. And you know, I think a lot of teams, they might have internal salary caps or things like that, just limiting them. You know, a lot of people, you know, assume that it was going to be, you know, a long-term thing. And I came into free agency either wanting, you know, 6 or 7 years or 1 year. And, you know, 1 year was going to be a situation where I could get my feet wet and see what the situation was like. And I'm happy that I ended up in Buffalo.
And so my guess then is that 6 to 7 years just didn't exist for you out there, or did it and it just wasn't the right fit?
It kind of did, but I don't want to speak too much into it, but it didn't make sense. And it wasn't something that was, you know, that was right in front of me. It was something that I was maybe going to have to wait and things like that. And I just, like I said, it was different. I wanted to play somewhere where I felt valued, and Buffalo is that place.
So Buffalo is that place for you. Arizona, you were there, and then they go through the change. Was it the change that pushed you away from even thinking about Arizona? Just kind of maybe take us through that whole situation there, because they obviously had the change from John Chayka to Bill Armstrong.
Yeah, there was, you know, that was a little strange, to be honest. Wasn't expecting that. And, you know, John was the guy that I had a relationship with right from the start, and I really liked him. And then obviously he leaves, and we don't have a GM, and when we do get a GM, it's like 2 weeks before free agency. So this situation just, it didn't really make sense for me at this point in time there. And I felt okay kind of just moving on and seeing what else was out there.
Hey Taylor, I'm curious mentally for yourself, you know, when I look at your career, you had that huge year with the Devils, and then, you know, you had the injury, and since then it's been almost 3 years and you've played maybe 100 games, right, between coming back from the injury and then the pandemic and everything else that's gone on. I'm curious, you know, and now we don't know when the next season is going to start, but you'll have a pretty good rest here. When you look at all that and the lack of hockey mileage that's on you right now and the rest that you've had, does that almost add to your excitement for this year, knowing that you could be likely in the best physical condition you've been in a long time?
Yeah, I feel good. You know, last off season wasn't what I wanted. I had to rehab a knee injury, and that really prevented me from training the way that I want and the way that my training is a big part of the way I play. I play fast and I play physical. And if I'm not able to train in a way that's going to let me play like that, it's tough. But the last few months, you know, the last 6 months, even before the bubble, I was able to train how I wanted to, and my body feels really good. So, you know, there's a lot of different ways to look at it. I've had some injuries in the past, but I really don't have the mileage on me that some other players have at my age. And I'm really excited for what the future brings for me.
I know, Taylor, that Ralph talked to you, I believe it was Sunday morning. You said you got a FaceTime conversation with him that really sort of clinched it for you. And he talked to you about Buffalo, the city, the history of the franchise, but also the passion that he feels in the city of Buffalo for the Sabres. What do you know about that fan base there? And what did you learn from Ralph in that conversation? Maybe from Jack too.
Yeah, I mean, Ralph spoke about just what the city of Buffalo is like and how much he's come to really like living there. I know what the fan base is like. I watch the videos and I see how they support the Sabres and the Bills and just how crazy they are about sports in that area. And I'm really excited for that. I think as my career has gone on, I do really love playing in front of a crowd and a good atmosphere. That's something that gets me excited. And I'm really looking forward to experiencing what that's like in Buffalo.
I don't know if you see this comparison and you can tell me if I'm wrong. It won't be the first time, but when I look at Buffalo and the experiences that I've had covering games there, to me, they're very similar to going to Edmonton or going to Calgary, you know, very small towns compared to some of the other bigger cities that are in the NHL, but hugely passionate fan bases and where almost every game's a singular event that the city embraces. When you look at Buffalo, do you kind of see those comparisons?
Yeah, definitely. It feels like a Canadian city with regards to how they treat their hockey teams. And I'm, like I said, I'm really excited for that. I know that there's so many guys that have played in Buffalo and live there after their careers. And I know that around the NHL, people understand that, you know, once you get there and once you live there, you really love it. So I'm looking forward to that.
Well, Taylor, I hope you get to play in front of fans. That's number one. We would love to see that.
Yeah.
And number two, that team needs a winner. Haven't been to the playoffs since 2011, so hopefully you can help get them there this year, this coming season. Thanks so much for hopping on with us, all right?
Thank you.
It's great to get Taylor Hall on. Good stuff from him. Very intriguing, Sean, the one-year deal, $8 million for Taylor Hall with the Buffalo Sabres. He explained a little bit of it there, so good luck to him. You know, good luck to the Sabres.
Oh, for sure. And look, you know, the question of asking him about his health, right? Like, to me, when I looked at it, the guy's played 98 games in the last 3 years. The year after he was injured, the year of the trade, and then, you know, the little bit with Arizona. It's been 3 years of about 33 games each. He's got 89 points in those 98 games, playing some of them barely on one leg. So, you know, I'm curious. Some of the luster is off of Taylor Hall. Clearly, you know, he wasn't as wanted at in free agency as maybe people thought. But to me, he is an intriguing player in the fact that if he's healthy and he says he is and he's trained the way that he's trained, you know, earlier in his career, well, he could be a nightmare.
Well, and Ralph Kruger says that combo with him and Eichel can just be lethal, and that's both at even strength and on the power play. I agree with him with that. But let's circle back, Sean, to before we got Taylor on, we were talking about Corey Crawford, and you said that you were surprised by that move. I was too, but you, as you know, I talked to Martin Brodeur about that move. Marty was a big part of the pitch to get Corey Crawford to New Jersey. Crawford had, you know, pictures and posters of Marty Brodeur on his wall growing up in the suburb of Montreal. Marty explained it to me why they wanted Corey Crawford, because they have Jack Hughes, they have Nico Hischier, and they've got young players. And too often last year, he felt that, and they felt, I should say, that those young players would go out and do something, one mistake, back of the net, one mistake, back of the net. And it was demoralizing. It was crushing to them. So now what they figure is with Blackwood and Crawford, their goaltending is better and they can afford maybe to make that mistake, those young player mistakes, and not have to always pay the price for it. That's why they went out and got Corey Crawford. Honestly, I don't think the Devils are thinking we're going to win the Stanley Cup with Corey Crawford as our goaltender, maybe with Mackenzie Blackwood, but not with Corey Crawford. But they need to continue developing these players, and it's hard to develop the players when the puck is always going in your net when you make a mistake.
Yeah, look, and Corey Crawford's that goalie. Like, he reminds me of Grant Fuhr in the fact that, you know, that you're going to be facing two-on-one breaks. You know, the Edmonton Oilers at that point might score 7 goals, but they might give up 47 chances to do it. So, you know, I think that Corey Crawford, even though he played in front of a really good defense and during his prime in Chicago, they would open it up and he would make a lot of breakaway saves, a lot of two-on-one saves.
Yep.
The other important part, and look, I was shocked, but I understand it in retrospect. The other important part of this whole conversation is, and you brought it up a little bit, is Mackenzie Blackwood's their future. And he looked really good at times last year. And at other times, he looked like a 21-year-old goalie who didn't know what to do in the NHL. He doesn't know what it means to be an NHL goalie yet. He doesn't know the mindset. He doesn't know the work that has to go into it. You know, he doesn't know, you know, how to deal with the players in front of him as well as he should. And none of this should come as a surprise to anybody. I mean, think back to what you did when you were 21 and you showed up for your first job and people thought you were a moron.
I was not very professional, I'll tell you that much.
You know, Corey Crawford is going to be invaluable in turning Mackenzie Blackwood into the goalie that the New Jersey Devils think they have, right? And it never hurts when you're trying to recruit a goalie to send Marty Brodeur out to make that Zoom call.
How do you say no to Marty Brodeur? But to your point previously on Crawford, by the way, and facing a lot of shots this year, and Marty said that was a big reason why they looked at Crawford too, because they're going to face a lot of shots in New Jersey. It's just the way it is. He was 7-7-1 with a .923 save percentage in games when he faced at least 35 shots last year. Those are real quality numbers when you're giving up high volume of shots. So that's, I know it's surprising, but when you really look around and you dissect it, it's a move that makes sense to me. Did not make sense to me that the Chicago Blackhawks didn't bring him back though. That made no sense to me. I don't know what the Blackhawks are planning right now with their goaltending, unless they think and they believe Malcolm Subban or Colin Delia or Kevin Lankinen is a surefire number one. That's a hard sell to Jonathan Toews and to Patrick Kane, especially to Duncan Keith, and Toews to the Athletic, to Mark Lazarus and the Athletic. He expressed that disappointment, you know, with, you know, what's happened there and the shock that they did not bring Corey Crawford back, that they are pretty much going into a rebuild again.
Jonathan Toews can be shocked and, you know, he wants to win and he's the captain and all he's known is winning, but there's an economic reality to all of this. Right. And the sins of the past for the Chicago Blackhawks, and they weren't grievous sins. They were sins that had to be made when you're a championship team. I got to pay this guy. I got to pay this guy extra because he won for me. You know, all of those decisions are coming back now to roost, and the Chicago Blackhawks have some serious issues with the way that their roster is built. When it comes to the goaltending, to me, I kind of look at it, and we talked about this a little bit, the musical chairs have stopped.
Yeah.
There's still some goalies sitting out there. Right. And I think what you can do here is nobody knows when the season starts. Nobody knows what it's going to look like. You can maybe run with those guys. See how it works out for the first month. And then there's going to be some dudes sitting by the phone waiting, and you're going to get them at a discount because they're desperate to play. And, you know, I don't think anybody in the cold light of day can look at that Chicago Blackhawks roster, even with Patrick Kane, who's still an elite talent, Jonathan Toews, who's one of the greatest competitors, you know, I've ever seen play, you know, some of the guys, the legendary guys that are on that blue line, and then look at teams like the Dallas Stars, the Vegas Golden Knights, the Colorado Avalanche, the St. Louis Blues, and say, you know, here's a team that's going to give them a run for their money. I don't see that team. So why pretend? Why not try and change it on the fly and see if you can get one more run out of that core? And you do that by trying to save money and make moves as you go along. So, I'm not overly shocked by it. I think there might be a bigger plan, you know, down the future, but I don't think Stan Bowman, you know, when he looks in the mirror and says, where is my team, says we're a goalie away from being a champion.
Probably not. But at the same time, I go back to what I said about the Devils. You know, if you're going to give up a lot of shots, as the Blackhawks are wont to do, because of the style that they play and the ability to open it up, you got to have a goaltender who you trust and who can save you on some nights from that, playing that style, because that's the style they play. And look, I mean, they may have very well have that in Colin Delia or Malcolm Subban and Kevin Lankinen, but we've never seen it. You know, I don't know that they have it. And that to me is the biggest issue. It's the same issue, as I said, that the Devils had, and the Devils went out and got the guy that the Blackhawks had. And, you know, it's not like they paid him an exorbitant amount of money either. And I know every dollar counts in this market, but $3.9 million for Corey Crawford over 2 years, it's not an exorbitant amount of money. It is more than double right now what the Blackhawks are going to be paying their goalies. But part of that, and you brought it up, was some of the sins of the past. Look, I understand it. They didn't need to go out and sign Brent Seabrook to an 8-year contract when he was 30 years old. That was a mistake that people identified at the time, but they did it anyway. So I'm curious to see how the Blackhawks respond to this. Taves is not going anywhere. He's motivated. He's going to try to do whatever he can. Kane is the same way. But I don't get it. That's my thing.
No, but there are other teams where I do get it. And I'll tell you one thing I learned during this free agency period. Don't answer the phone when Joe Sakic calls.
Oh, he's good.
Just stay away, right?
Like, knows what he's doing.
You know, he Lou Lamoriello was in no man's land with the way that Islanders roster is constructed right now too. And he looked at, you know, Devin Toews and saw that he had elected for arbitration and knew that the price could be a bit nutty, right? Like, you don't know, you have no control once you go to arbitration. And especially with the way the rules have changed this year, where you can't negotiate once it starts. And, you know, a lot of times there's bad feelings that come out of it. So Lou did what Lou does, right? I have an asset. I can't control it at cost. I'm going to see what I can get for it. He got 2 second round picks for Devin Toews, right? Which I think is pretty fair return. I know Islander fans are like, oh my God, what did Lou do? You know, he had one hand tied behind his back and he was still able to get two nice pieces of return. But now I look at that Colorado blue line and I'm just like, oh my God, what a unit that is, right? you think about Cale Makar and you know, everything that goes there. And then they add a little bit of that veteran grit that you need and the championship grit again from the Blackhawks. They seem to be stocking everybody with some championship pedigree, but you know, Sod's there now and he's already like, I could sign here. I like how this team looks. He likes how that team looks because on paper, they're going to be a Western Conference finalist for a few years to come now. I'd stay away from the Joe Sakic phone calls if you're thinking about making a trade.
Well, I mean, for starters, Devon Toews is a good defenseman. I think he's a top four defenseman. He's certainly a top six defenseman. He had a good playoffs for the Islanders. And you're right. I mean, the arbitration situation might have been the thing that hamstrung the Islanders on this. They also have Noah Dobson coming. They also have Sebastian Aho, the other Sebastian Aho, not the center for the Carolina Hurricanes, the defenseman in the New York Islanders system. He's coming too. You get fair value back in return. That 2 second round picks is a fair value back for Devon Toews. But to your point on the Avalanche, I mean, Cale Makar, Sam Girard, Eric Johnson, Ryan Graves, who just re-signed a new deal, Ian Cole, Devon Toews. I mean, loaded on the back end, but a question mark, do we trust their goaltending? Do you? Do you trust the Avalanche goaltending?
Look, they were one goal away from going to the Western Conference Final.
Their goaltending was hurt. It was, but it
dude,
was
they were run, they were running out of fourth stringer for game they six were. And seven, and they almost won.
But it wasn't like Francois was very good before he got hurt. Grubauer was. That's the guy. He's the key guy. Grubauer.
You're telling me that you're going to hold it against them that they didn't get the Western Conference final because they had their fourth string goaltender in?
I'm holding against it. Well, Pavel Francouz is a guy that they identify as a guy they really like, and he didn't play well in the playoffs before he got hurt. Grubauer getting hurt really, really crushed him. But go on.
Yeah. So anyways, Pavel Francouz now has the experience of playing in the playoffs and seeing what it's like. Anton Khudobin didn't tear it up the first time he saw the playoffs either. You know, so he's got that experience. And you just named six guys that tell me that you don't need the best goaltending in the league. A, you're going to be limited in what you get from those six guys in the defensive end. And B, those guys plus the first line that they can put together are going to put some points on the board. You know, that to me, they're going to be one of those teams, you know, when we start playing again and it's 9:30 at night and you're like, oh, do I shut it down? I got an early morning. Oh, wait, the Colorado Avalanche are playing the Vegas Golden Knights. I'm in. It's going to be 5-4, 6-5, whatever it might be. And you're just going to have a rollicking time watching. So I love the way this Colorado Avalanche team looks.
Yeah. And to your point, Brandon Saad's got to be very happy too, because I mean, he's in a run and gun offense right now. And that's sort of his style. Let's bounce around a little bit. A couple of moves I liked for the Edmonton Oilers. We talk about Mike Smith bringing him back. That surprised me just because there were a lot of goalies out there. They might have made a change, but 1 year, $1.5 million, that's fine. But I love the Tyson Barrie signing. A 1 year deal for Tyson Barrie makes a lot of sense. I think it was $3.75 million. And I like the Kyle Turris signing at a 2 year deal because I think he slots in the right spot for that team too. And he didn't have a good run in Nashville, obviously, but maybe he can rediscover it under Dave Tippett there, playing behind Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. He's going to get some better matchups.
Oh, for sure. And look, he's again, you know, Taylor Hall talked about it. He's probably playing with the best center he's played with, and that's no knock on the guys that Kyle Turris has played against. He's played with. He's played with some pretty good centers. Yeah. He can kind of walk away from the struggles that he had. Look, I think getting traded is really hard, and then getting traded and not producing is a hell that you don't want to be in because, you know, you're reminded of it every day. So now he can kind of recalibrate and do what he needs to do. The Tyson Barrie move, I think, is great on so many levels, right? Edmonton doesn't know what their defense is going to look like. They're dealing with some injuries. They don't know who they're going to have when they come back. I thought he wasn't very good in Toronto, but I thought part of that was usage, and he didn't touch the puck a lot. Mm-hmm. He was used in some different ways, and the puck didn't go through him like it did in Colorado. And I think it will to a degree again, in Edmonton. And on that power play with those guys whipping the puck around, and he gets to kind of direct things from the point. If I'm a fantasy guy and I'm nowhere near as smart as Rob Reese or Pete Jensen, who do our fantasy podcast, but you know, I'll match wits with him and say, I'm going to pick up Tyson Barrie as one of my sleepers.
Well, and you're right about Oscar, you know, they're not sure about Oscar Klefbom, the injury right now. So is he going to be, he's likely going to miss the start of next season, whenever, you know,
he
might miss the whole season. Right. I mean, so that's obviously a huge loss. And I mean, Barry's a righty, Klefbom's a lefty, so it's a little bit different, but definitely.
And I'm sorry to interrupt, but they got some young guys coming too.
Yeah.
You know, I really like Ethan Bear is good.
He's very good. Yes. They do have Bouchard too, is another one that they drafted, could be coming as well. You know, I love Tyson Barrie. So I think a 1 year deal for a player like that, obviously it's way less money than Taylor Hall got, but you can get a player like that on a 1 year deal and see if it'll work. Then you work from there. I think it just makes, you know, in this market, it's great for the team. Does it make sense for the player? Probably not, but it's great for the team in this market. No question about it. But what about the Boston Bruins? Let's move east a little bit. They don't re-sign Krug. Apparently they never even gave Torrey Krug, you know, a legitimate contract offer. And they got Craig Smith. Where are you with the Bruins right now, Sean? Because I'm a little like, nah, I think they're still going to be good, but are they what we know the Bruins to be anymore with the roster that they have?
I don't think so. Not right now. I think, you know, you look at them and they still have that really high end top line. They have a number one defenseman in McAvoy. Chara's still out there. You don't know what's going to happen with him. No more Krug. And I thought Krug was so underrated for them. You know, he was so much, he was Boston, right? Like he was
named his dog Fenway, I think.
Yeah. But he was everything that Boston fans loved, right? Like you still remember that one play in the Stanley Cup final when his
bucket
comes off, his bucket comes off and he goes flying down the ice like a lunatic with his hair, you know, and he's ready to fight. And, you know, you're like, and the crowd was roaring and you're like, that's a Boston guy. And you almost kind of wish that he could, you know, finish there. They found him, you know, they signed him as a free agent. They developed him into what he is. And, you know, but a player's got to go and get what a player can get. And then an organization has to control, you know, their assets as much as they can. So that was a no-win situation there. They couldn't offer him what he needed and be cap compliant. They would have had to do a lot of what Vegas is doing, right? They would have had to kind of blow up their team. And it seems they believe in their team. To me, when I look at Boston, Craig Smith to me is a Boston type player. He's very responsible. He can do a little bit of everything. He'll, you know, throw the body around. But when I look at them, it's all going to come down to Tuukka Rask, right? What's the fallout going to be, you know, from him leaving the bubble to deal with his daughter's medical condition? And, you know, I think the players understand it. I think the city has had a little more of a problem understanding it. The rabid fans there, some of them have a tenuous grip on reality at times. And, you know, so he's going to have to deal with all that. He spoke to the Boston Herald last week. They got him at Sean Thornton's golf tournament. And, you know, he's like, look, I don't want to go anywhere. I'm coming back. I'm planning to play. I want to win. You know, it was what it was. And anybody that, you know, says they want to do the same thing, I have a hard time believing. When you're and I thought about it, you know, you have kids, I have kids. I couldn't imagine being halfway across the country and my wife calling me and saying there's something wrong with one of my kids. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what would you do? You would buy the next plane ticket home and you'd go home and you'd deal with it. So, but, you know, so is he going to be the same player when he comes back? I believe he will. And, you know, but I think it remains to be seen. So they're going to be a really interesting team, and a lot of teams around them got a lot better. There's a lot more competition, I think, than they used to have.
Oh no, that division's better. There's no question about it. Way better than it was. It's not going to be as top heavy, I don't think, as it was last season in particular. But in regards to Tuukka Rask, I mean, this guy's going to retire. But remember, he's going to retire a Boston Bruin. Whether it's after this season coming up, if they don't re-sign him, I don't see him going anywhere else. Or they re-sign him to another, because he's got one more year and then he's a UFA. He has expressly said it. I don't want to play anywhere else. And he's a Bruin. That's what he's going to be. And you know what? I do understand. I get it a little bit from the fan perspective, because they don't see the reality of the situation. They see their team, right? And these guys just wear a sweater. They wear a jersey and they play on the ice that their team plays on. And whoever is wearing that sweater, they're going to root for. And if you aren't a part of it, and you leave, you know, willingly like he did, for whatever reason it may be, and he had the best reason of all, you know, they're not going to be easy to forgive. I kind of get that. That's the reality that they don't live in. It's a reality that we understand, but fans are fans. But he's still an awesome goaltender. He's an elite number one goaltender, and he's going to be the difference maker for the Boston Bruins being a good team or not a good team, because he's that good.
Look, you say you get it. I don't get it. And I've never been shy in all the time we've co-hosted this podcast about where I come from and, you know, who I am and, you know, being a good New England boy until I moved to New Jersey when I was in my 20s. I don't get it. I don't get Tuukka Rask and the open hostility that he's had from the fan base since day one. Right.
But he hasn't won the Stanley Cup.
He hasn't won a cup. He had that tough game six. I don't know that it's his fault against Chicago. He gives up two goals.
It's not his fault.
Gives up two goals in less than a minute. But this, you know, Tuukka Rask is an elite goaltender. Everything's Tuukka's fault. Like, I don't know why the guy keeps coming back. I would let my contract run out, and I'd go someplace where they respect goalies and say, hey, look at me. I'm coming in as the savior. I'm the guy. And I do know why he doesn't do that, because him and Zdeno and Patrice and Brad Marchand, they are that same core we talked about in Vegas. But my God, get off the guy's back.
I agree with you. I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying I understand the fan perspective, because sometimes they don't live in the world that we all live in. That's why they're called fans. They're fanatics, you know. Anyway, they're on his back, but this guy is, like I said, he's still an elite goaltender. He is a number one goaltender, and he is going to be the reason that the Boston Bruins are a good team again, because he will be there and he will play. If it's whatever games they play, he's going to play more than half of them. And that is that. That's what it's going to be like. The Bruins are going to be a good team again, but that division is not going to be as top heavy anymore. Lots of turnover, topsy-turvy, right? I mean, free agency, you know, we can't put a bow on it yet, Sean, but we can come close.
Yeah, no, and it's been so intriguing between the one-year deals, guys waiting and not getting what they want. Look, the fact that Pietrangelo had to wait for so long to get his deal, and when we say so long, it was 2.5 days, but you know, when you're living and dying by every tweet and wondering what's happening, that's forever, right? And I can't imagine how difficult it must have been for him. And I still believe he wanted to go back to St. Louis, and you know, things spiraled out of control really quickly when you're playing poker and you're trying to represent a hand that you don't have. There's a good chance you're going to get caught. Yeah. And I think maybe they got caught a little bit, but there's a little more to go. And then we don't know what happens, right? Normally in a normal cycle, we would know what's next. Right now we'd be getting ready for some developmental camps. We'd get to see Lafreniere, who just signed with the Rangers, first pick to sign with the Rangers. And, you know, Byfield and Stutzel, who's actually hurt right now, broke his arm and, you know, needs surgery. He's going to be out for 6 weeks back in Germany. But we'd get to see some of these kids and then, you know, kind of go from there. And there's, and then we would have, you know, Traverse City and all the various prospect camps, you know, those things that we live for in the offseason. Yeah. We don't have any of that. We were, until we get to training camps, you know, hopefully in mid-December, this is all going to be new. And, you know, we're certainly going to have a lot to talk about, but it's going to be different than what our normal cycle of discussions are going
to
be.
No, it definitely will be. So we have to just continue to break this down. But you know what we can also do? We can take a breath, take stock of everything that's happened, take stock that we actually have a Stanley Cup champion in the middle of a pandemic, which I think is amazing. And keep going, keep talking about it, keep analyzing, Sean, because there's still a few guys out there. Mike Hoffman, probably off the top of my list, being the top guy. But until he signs and until there's more news, stay with us at NHL.com. Keep listening to the podcast, and everybody stay safe out there.